the protests in India, which is seen as, some people are saying, is the largest mass demonstration in world history. Or, you know, even at the Indian consulate there in San Francisco, you know, John Deere's and Kubota's and other tractors were very much part of the scene there as well. In a place like India, where you don't have the same employment opportunities as you would here in the United States, farming and land ownership is a huge part of sort of the ethos and probably one of the few guarantees you have. We pay homage that, you know, at one time you had these huge landowning farmers and essentially the tillers really were just, they had no part of the ownership, and there were revolutions that occurred that really made sort of the tiller to be the owner of the soil that happened 200, 300 years ago. So there's a lot of pride in actually having land ownership, even if it is just a few acres for a very, very small farmer.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
We often end up talking about the effects of farm policy on what we eat and how the foods are grown. Usually, we're talking about farm policies taking place in North America, but really there's farm policies all over the world. But there's some people here in the States that are particularly concerned about what's happening in other parts of the world, and in fact, all the way around the world. In this case, we're going to talk about India a little bit. And I am very happy to welcome Deep Singh, and he's the executive director of the Jacara movement in here in California. Deep, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Excited to be here. Thank you, Roger, for hosting us.
Well, you know, Deep, it caught my eye that there was a protest of sorts. I don't know if you call it a protest necessarily, but a demonstration in San Francisco first, that was identifying concerns by Sikhs in California in particular with Indian farm policy. There's a lot to explain there. And I think we need to kind of put this together. And a lot of people are kind of scratching their head and saying, well, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, well, this is the right spot to have that conversation. So I appreciate, Roger, you opening up with that, because you're right. What we saw last weekend in the Bay Area, but you're going to continue to see sort of rallies really throughout the United States, if not throughout the world, in solidarity with farm and farm labor in India, has its own story in terms of the absolute majority of Sikhs here, in especially in California, but throughout the United States, most of us have rural backgrounds. And so I'm excited on today's episode. We're going to connect the local to the U.S. national to the international, and it's all going to meet around farm policy.
You know, I've been going to farm meetings in California for quite a while. I've also done some work up in Washington State, too, and there's really lots of great farmers that are Sikhs. The thing that's kind of interesting, too, is that as engaged as the community is in agriculture here in the States, and again, I think particularly in California, to show such an interest in what's going on back in India is impressive. I don't know anybody else that I can think of that really does that. You hear about policies in Europe and people being concerned with the various agricultural policies in Europe, but there's not really a community in the States, for example, that gets excited. Well, you're looking at this and you're looking at that, but I got to explain what this and that is. So let's first go into the type of farm policy that is maybe in the process of changing or not changing enough in India that you're concerned with.
Sure. And that'd be a great place to start. So in India, as in many other sort of countries where the vast majority of the employee labor force is engaged specifically in farming, there have been traditionally, and it has its own history in terms of really coming from the British colonial period to after, for there to be certain sort of a government support system, especially in what we call the mundi system, which is after the crops go to harvest, especially wheat, but also rice, that there's a government related procurement system which is currently and sets what is called a minimum support price in some ways to take out some of the kind of, you know, and especially as someone coming from a farming background, just the constant kind of fluctuations and instability oftentimes within agriculture. So this has traditionally been the system within India, and had a lot of imperfections. Farmer suicides is a very common, unfortunately, as you saw in the earlier part of even in the 20th century in the United States, because of how one has to rack up such debt. You know, I mean, farming is a very debt filled practice, and with the hopes, and oftentimes it really is just hopes of making that up at the end of the season. And so, you've had traditionally sort of a system in place, and then the current government has really kind of punched through some very, very unpopular laws, and we can talk about sort of the effects of that. And as you said, you know, why do Sikhs in the United States or really throughout the world, it's because so many of us come from agricultural backgrounds. The reason that so many of our families, especially settled in California, really was about agriculture. That was true 100 years ago, and that's, you know, still say, you know, is true today.
Is Punjabi region in India, is it very similar to California climate?
Very, very similar. In fact, that's what. Let me take a step back from. I won't say California climate, but I will say the climate of the Central Valley.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Definitely not Los Angeles climate. Much more similar to the kind of lower temperatures and the summer heat that you would find really in that kind of, you know, San Joaquin Valley belt as well as up in the Sacramento Valley area as well.
So what you started describing was that there would be a support system. So if you're taking a product like wheat and from some other products, would it be similar to what exists in the United States with when people are able to get crop insurance to that creates kind of a base that they've got some. So if the whole thing just collapses, they at least have some of their income covered. Is it that kind of thing?
So you don't have the crop insurance system as you do here in the United States that really kind of built out, you know, especially subsequent to World War II. But although I think you saw this startings even during the like post the Depression, you don't have the private sector sort of crop insurance in the same way. And so then the government plays, you can say that sort of almost insurance role to say that, you know, obviously based on the gradation of the product you're bringing to the mundi, as we say in Punjabi, but to the procurement site, at least you will have certain insurances of a minimum price that one would receive that is standardized by the central government. And in a country as large as India, with over a billion people, you actually you're starting to see certain changes, and it really has been around this administration in other parts of India. So you have, in the same way that the states in the United States is the sometimes can be a local place of experimentation, and you can see different policies even play out differently within different states. That's also true in India. And so the central government is really had experimented with one state in India, one of the largest, most populous states called Bihar. And it has completely taken out the rug from under the agricultural community. And in a place like India, where you don't have the same employment opportunities as you would here in the United States, you know, farming and land ownership is a huge part of sort of the ethos and probably one of the few guarantees you have. And in the Punjab region, we pay homage that, you know, at one time you had these huge landowning farmers and essentially the tillers really were just, you know, they had no part of the ownership, and there were revolutions that occurred that really made sort of the tiller to be the owner of the soil that happened, you know, 200, 300 years ago. So there's a lot of pride in actually having land ownership, even if it is just a few acres for a very, very small farmer.
Well, you know, if you could help us paint a picture of a typical farm in that region. I've been to India, but I've not been into the region. I haven't been, really haven't been on farms in India. So if we were going to go out and visit a farm, is there a way you could describe it? Like, would the home base that they live in, would it be the house there? Would there be, you know, buildings there that are keeping tractors or any anything else that they're needing to farm with? And what might be an average kind of acreage that will be enough to support a family?
Absolutely, and that invitation will be extended to you next time you are in India to actually come visit some of our farms in Punjab. So, a typical holding, it can depend a little bit within Punjab, the region you're from, but it can go anywhere from 2 to 6 acres. And because inheritance is oftentimes given to, is equal amongst largely the males of the family, although you're starting to see certain sort of social changes, you know, to that where women should have inheritance rights as well. But generally it's been equally divided amongst the boys of the family. So because of that, that has then, it makes land holdings become smaller over sequent, kind of as subsequent generations, unless the families are able to sort of keep and pool sort of together, which is also one of the impetuses why oftentimes some of the younger men in the family will travel abroad, and why they oftentimes become involved in farming, whether that be here in California, up in Washington, or the Simon Fraser Valley up in Canada. So wherever they go, they look for a way to stay tied to the soil. Now, you will have, and it oftentimes depends on how large your size hold your landholding is. Villages are often constructed together, so the communities will live in small villages. The farmer and farm labor will oftentimes then travel, obviously early in the morning, to till their particular plot, and obviously in terms of the cultivation, there tends to be two or three main sort of crops per season, especially wheat and rice, paddy. Those tend to be the most dominant, although, you know, there are people that have definitely diversified into many other things as well, and have found a lot of success in sometimes more niche, you know, cash crops as well. And really, that's you know, some of the larger farmers may build a farmhouse on their land, you know, specifically, but I think partially for safety purposes, you know, like in many other communities, you'll see the dwellings kind of more concentrated in a village together.
And these small holdings, if they're 2 to 6 acres, are they still likely to have a tractor, wagons?
Yeah. So you saw profound changes within agriculture even prior, especially around the 1960s, in what was seen as the Green Revolution, as it was called, where particular smaller seeds were sort of introduced, a more sort of industrial agricultural process. So, you know, if you're watching the protests in India, which is seen as, some people are saying, is the largest mass demonstration in world history for how many people are there currently. And you have to remember, India has large, large populations of people. Or if you were last weekend, you know, even at the Indian consulate there in San Francisco, you know, John Deere's and Kuroto's and other tractors were very much part of the scene there as well.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So I would imagine we can go online and we could probably see the protests going on in India. So we can do some Google searches and find some live feeds, I suppose. And then I want to get back into what's being done here in the States, but I'm still trying to picture this because what's at stake here? It sounds interesting to me that many of the Sikh communities they've established here on the West Coast, they're running pretty good size operations. I mean, there's some that are thousands of acres, there's some that are 100 acres, there's high value crops. And to take the interest in these really smaller ventures back in India, that's, I think it seems commendable that there is that level of concern. But it is because of interesting, because the scale of so many of the farmers here that have come from India to farm more on the West Coast, they're pretty good size.
Pretty good. Absolutely. I mean, whether that be, you know, you have the Peach King in Yuba City, or the Raisin King, as they call here in Carruthers, not too far from where I'm at. You have Punjabi Sikh farmers that have huge land holdings, but at the same time, I think so much of the identity in certain ways of how certain members of the community perceives of itself is tied to farming. And, you know, as shared, you know, in Punjab, as compared to other parts of India, you had revolutions fought so that the tiller of the soil would be the owner of the land. And there is a tryst with history there that also plays a large role, that even if I have something small, it is something that we fought for, where you don't have kings and nobles that sure. You know, essentially sure. Controlled large swaths of lands, and we were just merely tenants.
Really interesting, and it's kind of reverse of what's happening here. We have a lot of large scale farmers, but I hear a lot of people all over the United States are trying to get started with some small farms that include produce, that greenhouses and so forth, that they don't necessarily have the big acreage and the big equipment. So our small scale farms are just emerging, and it's the other way around in India, where you're trying to preserve that. So basically at the heart of this is that there's a government attempt to just remove a lot of the support for farmers. Now, did I understand you correctly that maybe the Punjabi region or other regions, that some of the regions are going more extreme than nationwide?
Correct. So they have actually implemented what they're hoping to implement in Punjab and Haryana, which are some of the most fertile area in India. So they've already implemented some of these in other regions where you can basically sort of see, and again, there's some saliences with histories, whether that be for the Mexican farmers, especially after NAFTA, or specifically even parts of American history, where we've seen sort of large agro businesses really be able to kind of consolidate because, you know, to have a tractor or whatever the particular farm input might need. When you can do that on a huge scale, it's obviously, it makes sense to have huge swaths of land. And so you're starting to see that sort of consolidation in other areas. And the worry is that, like I said, for land that has been in, for some families, for there for, centuries now, that large agribusinesses will sort of have a leg up in the new system, and will be able to kind of, the value of the land will come crashing down, forcing people to sell.
So is this coming from parliament you know, is this a policy that somebody has introduced legislation and passed a bill, or is this something that's being established just by the federal or the regional governments and launching these policies? Where's the spot that you try to get them to touch the brakes?
So specifically, within India's parliamentary system, I think something akin to our House of Representatives here. So you have one dominant party, and that dominant party has always represented sort of urban interests as well as sort of the interests largely of kind of what is called a Hindutva ideology, which has been making it very, very tough for other minority groups, whether it be the Muslim community, which represents over 10% of the population, the Sikh community, which is a smaller group, or even Christians. And they've really kind of been asserting themselves in a very sort of dangerous way. And so without really getting input from any stakeholders, it seems to have come from the top. And the top is very sort of wedded to large-scale industrial businesses within India. So really, it was three successive bills were passed by their parliament, but there was really no opportunity for people to give that sort of input, especially that would have such widespread changes and such profound changes on Indian agriculture. So initially, you started to see movements, especially within Punjab, which is just one state within India, where people started putting pressure on their local state governments. And then as a groundswell began to emerge, they said, we are going to march on New Delhi, which is the capital city. And as they've done that, farmers from across India have been actually joining. And they're actually surrounding the city and saying that, and it's, there has been no destruction of property. There has been no violence, at least up to this point, except by the Indian government, who has done some tear gas or water cannons and whatnot. But, you know, I mean, it's just an amazing sight to see so many people coming together, steadfast, and really calling for the government to rethink what this is doing and actually get farmers' input on these particular laws.
And then if they're successful, they're hoping that there will be a reversal, or there will be new bills introduced, new legislation introduced that the political system will say, you know, we've gone too far. We've heard from the people. And then I guess what you're doing here in the States, now we'll get back to here in the States, is you're adding your action, what, in solidarity with the protests taking place in India right now. Correct. And thinking, raising those voices, even none of us can vote for it, but the raising your voice here, that it adds to the pressure on something happening in India.
As well as just to, and we've been in touch with a lot of our congressional officials here to make sure that letters are being sent, and at least to the Indian embassy in the United States, that the world is watching. So it's not so much here to say, I mean, this is going to be decided in Delhi, you know, in whatever occurs. But we feel a responsibility here to say, have these conversations and negotiations in good faith. And we want to prevent any violence from the state being meted out against the farmers. So that is something, because we have seen the state done this in the past. And so we want to make sure that the attention of the world is on India. So at least whatever comes, that has come out of good faith and not through violence from the government.
So I wonder whether that kind of the implications that we just so happen to have our new vice president, his mother is from India, and right. she knows agriculture in California enough. I mean, she wasn't doing an ag job here, but she's been here in California too. It's kind of it's an interesting time. you know, people haven't talked much about, you know, these backgrounds, other than think that they're glad to see diversity in many of our offices right now. But sure. To have the first woman vice president also be one of the first of Indian heritage, in addition to being an African American heritage, really interesting time. So that's exciting. So now let's get to organizing. How do you do this? I mean, you know, you were talking about bringing tractors and trucks and all these things to draw attention to the plight. And it reminds me, many years ago, something similar was done in Washington, D.C. And the farmers, I know some people that drove tractors all the way from Texas to Washington, D.C. And in fact, one family, a couple brothers I know that did that, and they stayed there and became lobbyists. And they've been there ever since. And somewhere around in there, Willie Nelson started doing concerts. So I think you should still hold out for that. You need to get Willie Nelson on board while he's still able to. So someone has to say, okay, y'all, let's get our tractors, let's get our trucks, let's head to San Francisco. How do you get organized for that sort of thing? Who says, okay, I'm going to do this? And is it any, you know, is it done in sync with what's being done in India?
So yes, and kind of, in the sense that, as many of us have been watching from the States, and largely through social media, because even the Indian media has censored a lot of news coming out. So we're highly reliant on talking on phone calls to our family members. WhatsApp is a very popular social media network for how information, messages, and videos can disperse. Of course, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and I can't even keep up with all the different ones that are always help disseminating information. So there was a groundswell of, especially where you have in California, a very large Punjabi Sikh community that we're getting updates from their family members that are participating in these particular protests. And so we kind of just began speaking to a number of like partner groups who we've engaged with in the past, and really just said, let's do something together. And again, in some ways to increase that sort of media profile and help educate people here in the United States about what's going on. And, you know, and I can say we're successful because this podcast, I'm speaking with you. And so obviously there was some success to that. So we really put it out on social media. We had, we organized meetup points, really across the Central Valley from Bakersfield and Arvin, you know, to Fresno, to Livingston, to, you know, Sacramento, Tracy, Ceres, Yuba City, Live Oak. And you had this kind of huge convergence from the Central Valley and then over to the Bay Area. To be honest, Roger, initially we were expecting maybe 1,000, maybe 2,000. One of the toll workers on the Bay Bridge was saying we think it's closer to 10,000 people. Cars ended up showing up, and we were hyper aware that the governor last week had put out a more stringent stay at home orders that was going to be implemented just after this rally. So we wanted to have a vehicular type rally to at least mitigate the spread of COVID. Because we wanted to protect our own families, our own communities, and our neighborhoods, but we know we have a larger responsibility to keep all of us safe, you know, from in the midst of this pandemic. And so, you know, when we saw that there was going to, I think we started getting a feeling that this is going to be much larger than we thought, because on Friday evening, where the rally was happening on Saturday, on Friday evening we asked people if they would be willing to come to their local Sikh Gurdwara religious institution. We would have poster boards and liquid chalk if they want to, you know, write messages on their cars. Mm. And then that's when we started getting a feeling like, oh, wow, this is going to be much, much larger than we initially expected.
You know, I need to make sure I pause here for getting my pronunciation right. I've always said Sikh, and I hear you say Sikh, so getting it wrong.
And there's an easy explanation for that, Roger, because most Sikhs will say Sikh to a non-Sikh, because if I say I am Sikh, you might say, I hope you feel better.
You know, so, that's it. That explains a lot. I feel a lot better now. So excuse me. I don't think I can change my habit to end this. So stay with me, because whenever I say Sikh, I mean Sikh, apparently. But we've had a lot of that around us, the Sikh version for right now. So anyway, glad to clarify that.
Yeah.
Now, are there other events being planned right now, or you got some other rallies?
There are indeed. There's actually a rally, which I needed to give you information about, actually being planned for Sacramento.
I need to get the information, because I think I'm going to, you know, you make it inviting in that you can tend to go and still take care of your social distancing, because just stay in your vehicle or stay in your tractor. That makes some sense too. But, and then people go around and they're all talking about, people are going to say, you know, this is to support the smaller farms that are under pressure in India. And I guess what you're hoping, with a lot of people say, well, that's a good idea. And they're going to talk to the congressmen. They're going to talk to people to do policies. And the word is going to get back to India.
Exactly. And there has been at least those that have written letters, at least at this point, to the Indian embassy. It really has been bipartisan in terms of the number of congressional officials that have at least written letters of concern, not so much trying to tell a sovereign country about what they should do or not do, but really just saying, this issue is important. So we want you to have your talks in good faith and not use violence against peaceful farmer protesters.
Well, the business side of this, I think, can be helpful too. I know in agriculture, there's India is a huge importer of certainly almonds. And there's a lot of the Sikh farmers that are producing almonds, and they're exporting them to India. So it's huge. It's a massive, massive, important business. So I think that those channels ought to get some return phone calls when they start saying, hey, look, we want you to think about this. Those trade channels give another angle for some leverage.
Absolutely. You brought up almonds, and that has a lot of resonance with me, because I kind of grew up always around almonds here in Fresno County. But some of the Sikh farmers here have sent tons and tons of almonds in support of the farmers. And so we've just seen images of them drinking almond shakes and having all kinds of almond products, because they have created a huge encampment, and they're saying that we're willing to wait this out to make sure that the government actually comes in and has talks in good faith with some of our leadership. And they're holding the leadership accountable, saying, we want you to take your own food when we go meet government officials, because we're not here to, you know, we're farmers. We're not here to sit at 5-star restaurants. We're here to bring our own food, to say we are independent people, and we're coming with our heads held high. And so there's a lot of symbolic resonance that you're seeing around these protests as well.
Funny thing about almonds, I remember talking to people from that region that said they grew up always having that they put like 7 almonds in a glass of water overnight. And is that right? Am I making this up?
No. Absolutely. We have my mother would feed me a lot of almonds. We believe it's a good brain food that somehow makes me smarter.
No doubt. No doubt. Now, let's just kind of wrap up. I wonder where you're coming from, because you don't get to work on these kind of protests and rallies all the time. And so what is the Jakara movement? You're the executive director of the Jakara movement. What is that?
Correct. So we work largely with youth throughout the state. So we have, for instance, high school chapters on over 70 campuses throughout the state, and on some of the CSU and UC campuses, our collegiate campuses here in California. So we create like a community leadership pipeline, but do a lot of work in terms of civic engagement. We were heavily involved in making sure all Californians participated in the 2020 census that just ended. And then a lot of it just depends on specific work county to county. So, for instance, in Kern County, Fresno County, Stanislaus County, and Sutter counties, we've been partners with public health in making sure that, for instance, outreach and education, especially around COVID, is being disseminated to all communities. So, you know, our focus is always on kind of our youth work, but, you know, oftentimes we partner up with different, whether it be public health, whether it be counties or any sort of agency to make a huge impact on the communities we serve.
So the communities you serve are not limited then to Sikh communities?
No, I mean, definitely want to say that is our focus, but because oftentimes in the areas we work in, you don't have sometimes large ecosystems of other organizations because, you know, we will be in those rural communities like Kerman or Livingston or Sanger. And sometimes you don't have large number of groups. And so we always welcome all. In fact, some of our leadership, even at some of our high school clubs, we've had I remember one of our presidents was from African American heritage. You know, we've definitely had people from all heritage participate in our programming, and we love to welcome all and invite all any opportunity we have.
Now, were you born in California?
I was indeed. Yeah.
Have you been back to India?
Many times. I mean, growing up, most of my, all my extended family was there. Slowly, some of them have migrated, whether it be here to California or some actually towards that Washington Canadian border we were talking about earlier on the podcast. But most of my family still is in Punjab. So growing up, that was a kind of a pilgrimage every 2-3 years with my mom. When I was younger, I don't think I enjoyed it as much, but as I got older, I really appreciated having a chance to, of course, connect with my cousins, but also just having more of an appreciation of where my parents came from.
It's a long ride to go there and come back over again. Well, I really, really admire what you're doing. Now, if people would like to keep track or be able to add their voice to what's going on and track what's happening with the foreign policies in India and be able to say, hey, yeah, pay attention to this. How can they help or how can they learn more about what's going on?
You know, I mean, the best way is probably just to start on whatever news websites you use or start with a couple Google searches. I mean, you're starting to see op-ed pieces being published in the Washington Post. A lot of the major news outlets are beginning to cover it. You can definitely check out our website, and we can add you to our newsletter list where we are consistently sharing updates as well as our local programming. But, you know, just even going to, if you're on Twitter, hashtag farmer protests. If you take a look, you will find tons of information. And as I was saying, a lot of larger Western-based presses, especially here in the United States, are beginning to pick up on the article, both for its international implications, but also because so many people here locally and nationally are engaged with the issue.
You said that they could check your website. What is your website address?
www.jakara.org. And if you just add yourself to the newsletter, we'll make sure to keep you updated. We're constantly pushing out news on our social media streams, like our Instagram and Twitter and Facebook as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've really enjoyed this conversation, Deep Singh, and I want to thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk.
I actually really appreciate this, Roger, in more ways because it's actually our first opportunity to engage with the farming community here. And oftentimes we've engaged either internally within the Punjabi Sikh community or mainstream press who don't really understand farming that ask very generic issues, questions and issues. So I want to appreciate you for reaching out and, you know, allowing a longer format, a more nuanced format, and somebody that really understands the issues of farming. So this has been an absolute pleasure and an honor to be here on your show.
Bill, we're going to do it again sometime. If you see somebody driving around behind a tractor honking a horn with you, it might be me.
I'm looking forward to it. So, and if you're a farmer here in Central California and you're, or up in the Sacramento Valley and you're seeing all these orange flags, those are in support of the farmer. So just so you have a little bit of idea of what's going on there and why you're seeing all these orange flags.
Okay. Well, listen, again, thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk. Good luck. Hope it all works well.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Have a good one.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.